journey I take on Broadway and beyond. It's Broadway Journeys.
Viva la vie, Bohème! Today, I am chatting with the legendary Anthony Rapp. Anthony is best known for his iconic origination of the role of Mark Cohen in the revolutionary Broadway musical phenomenon, Rent. Anthony has also starred on stage as Charlie Brown in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, Lucas in If Then, and Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors. He has starred on television in Adventures in Babysitting, 6 Degrees of Separation, and Dazed and Confused. Anthony has toured around the world with his solo show, Without You, a memoir of love, loss, and the musical Rent. Anthony currently portrays Lieutenant Commander Paul Stamets on Star Trek Discovery on CBS. Anthony is the co-founder and organizer of the musical theater fan convention, BroadwayCon, alongside Melissa Anelli of Mischief Management. Here is my interview with Anthony Rapp. Welcome to Broadway Journeys, Anthony.
Thank you.
So, Anthony, let's start at the very beginning. How did you originally catch the musical theater bug?
I was 6 years old, and my mom was a nurse, and I was the youngest of three kids. And so the three of us went to the summer camp where she was working for a summer, which was in northeastern Pennsylvania by the New York State border. And I don't remember why, but I decided that I would audition for the kids' musical that year, and it happened to be The Wizard of Oz. And I happened to get cast as the Cowardly Lion. And I really loved it. And we went back the next summer and I did 2 more shows. And I actually wound up doing like the kids' show, which was Oliver. No, I might be conflating it, mixing up which one was which. And older kids, they cast me as Snoopy in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. So I did those 2 musicals. And then when I went back home to Illinois, I grew up outside Chicago, I started auditioning and doing community theater. Mm-hmm. And from there were directors that I worked with in the community theater world that were very supportive and encouraging. And they encouraged my mom to take me up to Chicago to audition for professional work. So I did my first professional show, which was Evita. The first national tour of Evita started out in Chicago when I was 9 years old.
Wow. That's a pretty young age to start acting seriously.
Yes. Yes.
Did the craziness of it like register at that age, or were you a little more oblivious to it?
I was just sort of doing my thing. I mean, I loved it, and I had some natural ability for it and a lot of encouragement. And my mom was, she loved the arts herself. So I think it was an exciting thing for her. She was a single mother. My dad left when I was around 2. So she really pledged to do whatever she could to support her children and whatever we pursued. My brother was a really active athlete. And so she, did whatever she could to help him do that. And I was doing this, and she was doing whatever she could to help me do this. But yeah, it didn't seem like a crazy thing at the time. When I look back, it's kind of wild. It was a very different era. That this is before the internet, before reality TV, before like Insta fame.
Yeah.
So there was no thinking on anyone's part about like that side of things, whether it would mean fame. It was just like something that I loved to do and then had opportunities to do.
That's sort of a nice thing about back then. Like people weren't just thinking about, oh, I'm doing this to be famous. It's like, I'm just doing this because I love it.
Yeah, I mean, and there may be people who were pursuing it for fame and fortune. I'm sure that was part of it for some people, but it just wasn't the same kind of cultural awareness of fame and celebrity and, there were still some like tabloidy things, but it wasn't like it is now.
It wasn't like the main focus of.
Yes.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Rent a little bit. What are some of your favorite backstage memories from Rent?
That's such a broad question. Overall, the experience of working with 14, my fellow, there were 15 of us in the original cast. We got along so well. We were so deeply connected to each other. So it was just a pleasure going to work, like with such a dedicated group of people who cared so deeply and worked so hard. I was hardly ever backstage during the show. Like, I was on stage most of the show. So, you know, I didn't have a lot of time to do stuff. I, you know, had a couple little moments where I could sit, like, during Light My Candle in Glory was one of the few times where I had a little bit of a break. Right. Some, you know, mostly I was working. I mean, it was just a play. It was an incredibly meaningful and intense and pleasurable and emotionally rich experience from top to bottom, from day one.
Yes. It's just such a revolutionary musical to be in. It's very exciting. If you could play one other character besides Mark in Rent, who would it be?
I guess Roger. I mean, I feel like I have a pretty deep understanding of him based on, you know, the way that our characters are really linked to each other. And I've directed the show, so I feel like I have a lot of understanding of what he's going through. Although I couldn't really sing all of it. Like, they'd have to modify the keys a little bit. It's a little too high for me.
Yeah. You reprised your role as Mark in the Rent movie in 2005. What are the main differences between filming a Broadway show and just being on stage in a Broadway show?
The biggest difference is, well, there's a lot of differences, but the main thing is that on a Broadway show, you do the whole show top to bottom, night after night, so you get to do the whole journey, and when you're doing a movie, you're doing, like, little chunks. Right. Like, so, like, you could do a scene, any given song or scene might take a day or multiple days, but then once you're done with that, you're done. You don't go back to it. So it's like, it's about doing everything you can to, like, make it really count. I mean, that's what I try to do on stage 8 times a week. But in film, it's like this knowledge that this is going to be it forever.
Right.
Changes the dynamic somewhat. And then you get really zeroed in and focused on that scene or that song. But then you kind of, like, you just really let it go and move on to the next thing. So that's a huge difference. The lack of an audience is a big difference, but in a fun way, the crew kind of becomes an audience. And also, like, when we were doing La Vie Boheme, for instance, there were a lot of extras, background actors on set with us, and they're kind of your audience. So it's not like there's no audience, but it's not the same as, like, 1,200 or 2,000 people.
Right, it's not the same energy, like that big, exciting energy.
And the other thing, one of the other big differences, doing a musical movie, you record the songs beforehand, and then when lip syncing is kind of a misnomer because we were singing on set. They're just not recording the singing for the use in the film. But you can't just, if you're just lip syncing, then you're not going to have the same kind of intensity in your body. So we were singing. So singing along with in perfect time with what we recorded. But so in a way, you're committing your performance in the recording studio before you film the scene.
Interesting. I didn't know that you're actually singing. You're singing along to it. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. If you don't, it's going to change everything about your physical intensity and the way your mouth moves and the way your throat looks and your body. You know, I mean, maybe there are some people who just lip sync. I can't imagine it. But we were all really singing on set.
Yes. How did you and Melissa Anelli first come up with the idea to start Broadway Con?
So she had been doing, with her company Mischief Management, LeakyCon at that point for a couple of years. I can't remember exactly how many years. And I think GeekyCon had also happened at that point. But LeakyCon was around the Harry Potter fandom. And I'd attended one of the LeakyCons, and I was so impressed with the energy and the spirit and the vibe of it. You know, the convention world has gotten a lot bigger in the last few years. But a lot of it is a little more transactional and not always so community focused.
Yes.
And their commitment from the beginning was doing everything they could to really create a sense of community. And I was really struck by that. So she was at my house during the Tony Awards. I can't remember exactly what year it was, but the year that Neil Patrick Harris hosted. And there was a thing at the end, and she likes to tell the story. So at the end of the show, Lin-Manuel Miranda had, like, written a rap for Neil Patrick Harris and Audra McDonald to do at the end of the telecast that was, like, a recap of what happened that night in the Tony Awards. And there was something about that energy of that year that Melissa was like, this, we, something about that just spoke to her. Like, this is the kind of vibe that we have in our events, and we should do a theater convention. We didn't know we'd be called Broadway Con at that time. But so she kind of sat on it for a minute, or like a week maybe, and then came to me and she's like, what do you think about this? Do you think this is a real thing? And I said, immediately, I was like, yes, and you would be the person to do it. So my role at first was really to kind of legitimize her and her company to the people in the community, to say like, okay, so we have this idea, we want to do this, and I promise you that if you participate, you'll be treated well. It'll be meaningful. It's a community-based effort, and it's something that I think could really make a difference in our community. And happily, like, the year one, even with the blizzard, which was crazy, was still such a... I mean, it was a success in terms of the numbers of attendees, but it was a real success in terms of the experience people had.
The came up with the blizzard party line, right?
Yeah. So it was like... We lived up to, like, I'd made these kind of, I wouldn't call them promises, but I had, like, really said, like, I think this is, if you do this, this is going to be really worthwhile and meaningful, and it proved to be so in ways that no people were even, I think, happily surprised by. And so it really put us on the map in a wonderful way. And now it's kind of like it's its own thing.
It has its
own energy and momentum, and I'm involved in it in terms of, like, I do stuff every week, every year, but I don't really, there's no more, like, I don't have to, like, knock on the doors to, like, convince people that it's a good thing.
Right. You know, to be a door-to-door salesman for Broadway Con, just. What are some of your favorite panels that have been in past Broadway Cons?
This past year, my really good friend Alana Levine, there were two panels that I did this past year that were really wonderful. So she was Lucy with me and Charlie Brown. So she and I helped put together the Charlie Brown reunion panel, which was very meaningful, very moving, and really fun to be with all my castmates from that. And then she also put together a panel where she wanted to talk to actors about what it's like for us to create our characters. And it was with Donna Murphy and Melissa Errico. And it was just, you know, to be with very talented people, but to be able to talk in depth about the process and have such an engaged audience, that was really meaningful. Last year we did, Lisa Crone was the head of, was she the head? No, I'm sorry. I think it was Alana also was the moderator, but talking about activism, you know, especially after the Trump election, you know, there was Lisa Crone and myself and... I mean, just some really exciting to be able to get in a room with people and talk about that kind of thing. You know, the Rent reunion panel the first year was very meaningful. And of course, the party line is really fun every year.
Oh, yeah. What were some of the most difficult parts of organizing Broadway Con at the beginning?
Well, it wasn't, I mean, I wouldn't say it was difficult, but not knowing exactly who was going to be saying, yeah, that wasn't difficult. That's nothing was difficult. It was like, I had a lot of confidence and I happily had a lot of enough connections that we could get enough cool and exciting and fun people to be a part of it.
Right.
I didn't have to deal with the logistics, the venue logistics and I don't do that stuff. I'm sure some of that is really headachey for the people at Mischief, but from my perspective, nothing was difficult about it. It was fun and pleasurable. You know, there was a bit of a speed bump we hit with equity. There was a misconception, you know, the scale of these things, to do something like this in New York, and it has to be in New York. I mean, because that's the home of Broadway, right? But to do it in New York is really expensive. And so there was a misconception that there was budget available to pay people more than we were paying them, because we're, you know, most people, it's almost all volunteer. There's a little bit of budget to pay a couple people in certain situations, you know, but it's very, very, very limited. And so we had to have like a really, like, tough conversation with Equity. You know, I'm a very proud Equity member, have been since I was 9 years old, just about the nature of that. And then they could understand, oh, okay, this is not like some big money-making scheme that people are like, believe me, no one's making a big profit off of it. This is not what's happening. It's, you know, we're so accustomed to the business model of Broadway where the producers are making money hand over fist sometimes and actors have to fight, you know, to be paid a fair wage relative to what the producers are making. That wasn't the case with BroadwayCon. It's really like we're trying to provide a service. We're trying to break even,
right?
You know, so it can continue and all boats rise together kind of thing. So that was a little bit of a speed bump, it was really more than anything else, it was a misunderstanding of the scale of the event.
Right. Everything else, smooth sailing.
Yes.
Yeah. So you did your solo show without you a couple of years ago. Would you ever want to reprise this show or do another solo show?
I would very much love to do Without You for a real run in New York. Would be a dream. It's really hard right now while I'm doing Star Trek Discovery to know my exact off season because we're not a regular network show. We don't have the typical network schedule of being off these months and then filming these months. So every year it's been different. So without that kind of solid knowledge of my start and end dates, it's hard for me to really schedule a run of something because it could change. And
right.
You can't really rent a theater on dates that are that flexible. So unfortunately, I might have to wait until after Star Trek Discovery ends. I don't know how long that might be before I can really contemplate a proper run of Without You. But I would very much love to do it.
Also, if you could return to the stage in one revival of a Broadway musical, what would it be and what role would you want to play?
I mean, I got very close to replacing Alan Cumming in the Cabaret revival back, you know, how many years ago was that now? Almost 20. A long time ago, early 2000s. I would love, that's a role, to play the MC in Cabaret would be a role that I'd really love to do.
Yeah, that is a super fun role and just a crazy cool show.
Yes.
Also, speaking of Star Trek, if you could play a Star Trek character in a supposed Star Trek musical, what character would you want to play?
Well, Stamets, of course.
Of course, but like besides,
yeah.
Stamets.
Data or Spock.
I could see that. Yes, that would be really fun. If you could play one role of the opposite gender, what role would you want to play?
Probably Lady M.
Ooh, that would be a fun one. What would be your second choice of a career besides acting in musical theater?
It's always going to probably something to do with being in the arts. So, I mean, I have directed a bit, I've written a bit, I've produced a bit, I've taught. I think something in those realms. It would be hard for me not to imagine being a part of an artistic endeavor to some degree. But it doesn't necessarily always have to be acting.
Right. Just at least be some part of the arts, because, you know, you just have to always spark your creativity.
Yes.
If you had to be stuck in an elevator with three musical theater characters, who would they be and why?
That car there.
Stuck in an elevator could be such a miserable experience, perhaps.
Exactly.
I mean, I wouldn't want to be stuck in an elevator with Sweeney, but it's an interesting character. Like, I always am drawn to like complicated, dark, weird characters, but that's not necessarily somebody I would want to be stuck in an elevator with, obviously, because he's a dangerous person.
Right. Kind of murderous.
Yeah. I'm sorry that I'm not going to be able to come up with anything like too happy or too easily. Like, that's such a, I mean, you know, probably be fun to be stuck in an elevator with Angel.
Yeah.
Angel would probably be a good person to be hanging with for a minute. The roommate in Tootsie, I can't remember his character's name. He's funny. He'd probably be able to entertain it and to entertain you for a minute while you're in there.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, so many of the characters that immediately come to mind are kind of like weirdos and dark and like would not be fun to be in an elevator.
Right. Like, they'd be interesting to talk to, but not be stuck with, not be around. So to finish off, what was your experience doing Rent Live like this past year? Because that was a crazy experience.
Yeah, it was very moving to be there. We as a cast, the original cast, we've kept in touch with each other in many ways. It's not always very constant, but we have this connection to each other. And some people I've seen more often than others. Certainly Ada Pascal is the person I've seen the most. Daphne Ruben Vega, who lives here in New York. But just for all of us to be together again, it was very moving. And the love that we share, the respect we have for one another, the fun we have together, that was worth the price of admission for us. Plus then, and Jesse Martin said it so well, like backstage once when we were watching some of the rehearsal on the monitor, and we're like, it's like we're watching our children. It's like, come on, kids, you can do it. It's, and we don't like, I think I can speak for all of us, and we don't feel attached. Like they better do this or that or this or that. We want them to do well, but they don't have to do it a certain way necessarily. But we want them to, we want them to do well. And we want them to do well for their sake and for the show's sake. So it was like this kind of like, it felt very much like a passing of the torch and a generational thing, which, over the years we've seen other people do the show, but we were much more their contemporaries at the time. And now we're, it's their turn. I don't know. It was very meaningful that the show continues to have this life and resonance and meaning for people, and that there are these really talented people who continue to bring their hearts and souls to it.
Yes, and it just continues to be so recognized. It's really, it's a beautiful thing.
I agree.
Anthony, thank you so much for being on here today. This was so fun. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All the best to you.
Thank you so much for listening to Broadway Journeys. Remember, if you like the podcast, subscribe, rate, comment, and tell a theater-obsessed friend.